Good morning, everyone. It's double parsha this week, Chukas and Balak, which also means that this week we are going to be catching up with Israel. They've been a week ahead of us. So in Israel, it's only Parshas Balak, but in Chutz La'aretz and the diaspora, it's Chukas and Balak, so we'll be catching up with them. Just to begin with a very quick overview of the parsha. Chukas is a short parsha, but lots of things, lots of stories, lots of action. Starts off with the mitzvah of Parah Aduma, the red heifer. Later we read about the death of Miriam. Then the famous story of Moshe Rabbeinu hitting the rock. A war that the Jewish people have with the Edom, because he wouldn't give them passage to go through. In this week's parasha also, Aaron HaKohen passes away. Which is followed by a war, which the Torah calls a war with Kanani, but the commentators tell us it was actually Amalek posing as Kananim. The famous story of the snake, the plague of the snakes, and the metal copper snake that Moshe Rabbeinu erected, which when the Jews would look at it, they would pray to Hashem and it would go away. And then the parasha ends with a war on Sichon. So that's Chukas. And Balak, of course, we have the famous story of the king of Moab commissioning Bilam, who was a non-Jewish prophet, to curse the Jewish people. He's in God's hands at the end. God doesn't let him curse the Jewish people, and he ends up actually blessing them with tremendous blessings. Some of them very famous psukim that we use even in davening. And then towards the end, we have the story, the tragic story of the daughters of Midian, who caused and seduced the Jewish men, and that was Bilam's plan, because he couldn't get them any other way. He says if you make them fail and make them fall into sin, then God will punish them, which is in fact what happened, and ended off with the heroic act of Pinchas, which is next week's parasha, where he stopped the plague. Okay, so today, actually what I want to do is I want to focus on the beginning of the parasha Parah Aduma and explore a few things that I think we haven't done till now. But what I want to do first is just to share with you a nice vort. Not to go into it in depth, but just a nice vort about the story of the rock. The story of hitting the rock is a very, very complicated story, and it's difficult to know exactly what the sin, so to speak, of Moshe Rabbeinu was. He was punished. God didn't let him go into the land of Israel as a result. But it's not clear 100% exactly what, so to speak, his failing was. I'll just show you some psukim. I want to just share with you a vort from Rabbi Levi Yitzchak about this, a very beautiful vort. But I'm just going to show you first the psukim. Here we are. So if you have a look over here, there's the Jews didn't have water. So we read in the psukim the following. By Dabar Hashem Moshe Lemer, Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu saying, Kache samate, take the staff, take the stick, so to speak, the rod, the hakel es ho'edo ato ve'aron achicho, gather the Jewish people, you and Aaron, your brother, v'dibartem el asela le'enehem. You should speak to the rock before their eyes, v'nosan meimov, and will give water. You will bring out for them water from the rock, v'hishkiso es ho'edo v'espi'iram, and you will give the congregation to drink, them and their animal, their flock. So, Vayikach Moshe samatim lifnei Hashem kasher tzivo, Moshe Rabbeinu took the staff and as he was commanded. But then, as an introduction, he was a little bit frustrated, so to speak, with the Jewish people. So the next pasuk, this one over here, right? It says, Vayakhilu Moshe v'Aaron, esakol pnei asol, Moshe and Aaron gathered the people around the rock, Vayomer Elohim, and he said to them, Shimu no hamoirim, listen, you rebels, or you fools, as some people translate it. Hamin hasela, hazeh noitzel hamoirim, is it from this rock you think we're going to get water? So, the next pasuk tells us, Vayore Moshe es yodai vayachas selim vateh pamoim, Moshe Rabbeinu lifted up his hand, he hit the rock with the staff twice, Vayetzu mayim rabim, a lot of water came out, Atesh ta'edo be'iram, and the people drank and their animals as well. Okay. We'll come back to this text in a minute. But what we see here is not 100% clear. And then it says Hashem punished him. It doesn't say exactly for what he punished him. So again, I'm not going into the story. I'm trying to tell you a short idea from Rav Yitzchak Vadishov from the Kedushas Levi. Kedushas Levi says the following, that we find the dispute between Rashi and the Ramban, Rashi and Nachmanides. What was the chait? What was the failing, so to speak, of Moshe Rabbeinu? The Ramban says that actually the failing was that he turned to the Jewish people and said, Shimu no hamoirim. Listen, you rebels. He was harsh with them. He admonished them. He called them rebels. He was critical of them. That's, according to the Ramban, was the failing of Moshe Rabbeinu. Not because he hit the rock, but it's because he said, Shimu no hamoirim. Listen, you rebels. And as a result of that, Hashem punished them. Rashi, of course, says, simple pshat, the one that we always taught as children, that hikar sasela is because he hit the rock instead of talking to the rock, and that's why he was punished. Comes along Rav Yitzchak Radishev and says, it's actually not a dispute. So again, the Ramban says because he admonished them sharply and he called them rebels. Rashi says because he hit the rock. Comes along the Kedushas Levi and says, it's actually one reason. And he explains the following idea, beautiful idea. He says, when there's a leader who wants to inspire the people, influence the people, or even admonish the people, he says there's two ways to do it. There's two ways to get people to do the will of Hashem, to get them to improve their ways and so on. The first, he says, is moichiach bidvarim toivim. He admonishes them, but with positive language. In other words, he does a few things. First of all, he says, he tells them the great mila, the great level, and origin, source of soul, of the Jewish soul of the Jewish people. In other words, he brings out to the people how great they are, how amazing they are, where they come from, that every neshama, we are told, is carved out from underneath the kisei hakovei, carved out from the throne of glory of Hashem. Secondly, he says, he tells them the tremendous nachas, the tremendous pleasure that a person does, that a person causes, to Hashem when he does the mitzvahs. In other words, if we would know each time we do a mitzvah, how much knachas, how much pleasure, how happy Hashem is from the mitzvah that we do, how much, so to speak, Hashem allows it to matter to him, we would do it. Not only to Hashem, but he says when a person does a mitzvah, the goydel hasimcha, the tremendous joy, the energy of positivity and joy that we infuse into all the world, not only this world, but all the spiritual worlds. Right? He doesn't say this, by the way. The Baal Shem Tov says a similar thing. Sorry, not the Baal Shem Tov, the Magid of Mizrich. When the Pirkei Avos, the ethics of the father says that a person should always think, da malam ma'ilim imoch, know what is above you. So the Magid explained, and he says, da, you should know what is above you. In other words, what happens in the higher worlds, what happens in the divine worlds, in the spiritual worlds, mimoch, all comes from you. In other words, when we do a mitzvah, when we do something good, we cause a tremendous nachas, a tremendous simcha, tremendous positive energy in all of the worlds, right? In other words, he's saying, this is one way that you want to tell off a nation that they should do the right thing, bring out how great they are from where they come, their origin, the spiritual origin of the soul, the tremendous joy you bring to Hashem by doing the mitzvahs, and the tremendous positive, joyous energy that you infuse into all of the worlds when you behave the right way. That's one type of leader, that's one way of admonishing the people. Then he says the second ways. Yesha moichiach es Yisrael. He says some people admonish the Jewish people harshly, embarrassing words, humiliating them. He whoops them into shape. In other words, he forces them almost, puts them down almost that they feel bad and they have to kind of do the right thing. Then he says, so those are the two types of leadership. He says, what's the difference? He says, what happens is, he says, first of all, a true leader is the first way. The true leader is the person who lifts the people up, who elevates the people, who allows the people to feel great about themselves. He says, that's a really, really great leader. That's a true leader. In other words, he gets the people to do the right thing, but not out of fear, not out of humiliation, but out of lifting them up and elevating them. Then he says, the second thing is this is what happens. He says, when you emphasize, when a true leader emphasizes and highlights the greatness of the Jew, the greatness of the Jew to do another mitzvah. He causes the entire creation, he causes the nature of the world to facilitate, listen to this, it's unbelievable, to facilitate, to support the person doing the mitzvah. Now he doesn't say this, but I'm assuming that it's connected to what the first Rashi, in the first very first Rashi in the Chumash talks about. And he says that Bereshis, when Hashem created Bereshis, He created Beis Reishis. He created the world for two things that are called Reishis, the Torah and the Jewish soul. In other words, we have a specific mission. We have been entrusted with an awesome responsibility. Right? We're called the chosen nation. It's not an elitist thing. It's a responsibility issue. Right? And that's the purpose of the world. We are here. Everyone has their role. Everyone is created by Hashem. But the Jewish people, as we know, the Bnei Yisrael, were entrusted with a particular mission to elevate the world and to bring the world to a certain spiritual perfection, to a certain spiritual purpose, to make it a home for Hashem, whatever that purpose is and how it spells out. But we are entrusted with that special special job, special role. When the world, this is what the B'nai Shavuot says, when the nature in the world feels and absorbs the greatness of that mission, the greatness of the Jew doing another mitzvah, bringing Hashem into the world, elevating the world, making it holy, when that is emphasized, when that is highlighted, then the world starts to facilitate the Jew to do the mitzvah. The world helps out. Nature doesn't stand in the way. Nature helps. Teva helps. Right? However, if the greatness of the Jew doing the mitzvah is not highlighted, if the spiritual leader of the Jew puts them down and forces them into doing a mitzvah, but in a way where the person feels downtrodden, he's minimizing the greatness of the Yid, then nature follows suit. And nature doesn't facilitate. And nature has to be forced, so to speak, to help out with the mitzvah. So he says, this is the mistake, so to speak, on Moshe Rabbeinu's level. Obviously, this is only talking about on his level. But this is the mistake, so to speak, that Moshe Rabbeinu made in this particular instance. He needed to admonish the Jewish people. They were complaining. They weren't doing the right things. So what did he do? He turned around and he said, Shimuno Hamoirim, listen to me, you rebellious lot. He put them down. Once he put them down, says the Barditchever, when you put the Bnei Yisrael down, you cause that nature, the world, shouldn't facilitate what the Jew has to do. It doesn't give, the nature doesn't facilitate giving the resources to the Jew to do the mitzvah and to serve Hashem. So therefore, the water didn't come easy. And therefore, it was supposed to be, you speak to the rock, it'll give water. No, the rock had to be hit. The rock had to be forced, so to speak, to produce the water. So therefore, says the Kedushas Levi, that actually the view of Rashi and the view of the Ramban is exactly the same thing. The Ramban says the sin was that he said to them, Shimun no hamoirim, listen, my rebellious people. Rashi says the sin was that he hit the rock. Says the Kedushas Levi, it's the same thing. He hit the rock because he said they're rebellious people. Had he not said they're rebellious people, he lifted them up and he highlighted their greatness. Had he inspired them to serve Hashem properly, realizing their greatness and how connected to Hashem they are and how important it is to do every mitzvah and how important it is for them to be connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and how amazing their source from the throne of glory, from the Kisei HaKavod is, the rock would have followed suit. The rock would have sort of served the purposes and given the resources to the Bnei Yisrael in order to do their mission. But because he put the Yid down, because he put the Bnei Yisrael down, the rock didn't facilitate it. The rock resisted and the rock had to be hit. So therefore the two pshatim, the two explanations are really the same thing. Because he said, Shimun no hamoirim, because he said, listen, you rebellious lot, that's why he had to hit the rock. And therefore Rashi and Ramban are in fact the same pshat. As I said, the story is very, very complicated. Tony Mefarshim wasn't the purpose of the shir to go into it now. I just saw this vart in the Kedushas Levi and I wanted to share it with you because I thought it was a very beautiful idea. Okay. Now let's go to the first part of the parasha, and I want to go into a particular angle today. The parasha of Parah Aduma. And I want to just bring up the screen. Let's have a look at the Pesukim. Okay, number two. Vayedaber Hashem l'Moshe vel Aaron lemer. Hashem spoke to Moshe and Aaron saying, Zois chukas ha-Torah. This is the chukah, this is the law of the Torah. Talking about the red heifer. Asher tziva Hashem lemer, that Hashem is commanded. Dabar Rabbeinu Yisrael speak to the Jewish people, v'yikhu eilecha, and they will take to you, they'll bring to you, para aduma tmima, a red heifer, a red cow, which will be complete, asher ein bomum, that has no blemish, asher lo'olo aleha'ol, nothing was ever put, and the cow that has never carried anything, it's pure, the way it was born. And then the Torah goes into a whole ritual, what has to happen, it's a korban, it has to be slaughtered, has to be burnt, the fire has to be turned into ashes, the ashes then has to be mixed with mayim chayim, with water, pure water from a spring. And then if someone came into contact with a dead body, and someone contracted what we call the tumah, the impurity of tomei meis, which is a severe level of tumah, the only way it can become pure is through the waters of the parah adumah, which has to be done on the over a 7-day period, the seventh, the third day, and the seventh day. I'll just read the pasuk which says that. It says, "Hu yischata boy, he will cleanse himself, this person, by yoyim hashlishi, on the third day, by yoyim hashvi, on the seventh day, yitra, then he'll become pure. If he doesn't do this the third day and the seventh day, he won't become pure, and then he won't be able to go into the Beis HaMikdash, he won't be able to eat sacrifices, and so on and so forth. So we have this concept, a difficult idea, abstract idea, of tumas meis, someone who becomes impure because he came into contact with a dead body, and the only way to purify is through the parah aduma, the red heifer, which is created that solution of the water with the ashes, and sprinkled on the person the third day and the seventh day. Now, we know that this is a very, very difficult mitzvah to understand. And the Torah, in fact, calls it a chukah, one of the chukim. Chukim are those mitzvahs which we don't have a reason for. We don't understand it necessarily. And in fact, this is the classic chukah. As we know, we've talked about this many times, that even Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, who was so wise that he had managed even to figure out the reason of those mitzvahs that we don't have a reason for, when it came to Parah Aduma, he said, Amarti Achakma. He said, I said that I was very clever, but Vehi Rechoika Mimeni, this one is distant from me, this one I don't understand. And of course, the Mefarshim go to delve into the whole concept of why we don't understand it, what's so difficult, and there's many, many reasons for it. Generally, the concept of Tuma and Tahara, purity and impurity, is something so abstract, we don't really understand it, it's just a decree from Hashem. Then when it comes to the Parah Aduma, there's a particular paradox, as we know, that the Parah Aduma, Matayr Esatmeim, was able to purify those that are impure. However, we know that the person who was busy preparing the Parah Aduma actually contracted a lower level of impurity and had to go to mikveh. So the Parah Aduma, therefore, is strange because it has a paradox. It's Matayr Esatmeim, it purifies those who are impure, but it impurifies those that are pure. Very difficult to understand. And therefore it's called a chukah. Now, we're going to go into this whole concept of what it means as a chukah in a minute. I just want to first just share with you a couple of issues to do with the Parah Aduma mitzvah. Just stop this for a minute, 1 second. Okay. So far, first of all, there's the interesting concept, which says, Rashi brings down the beginning of the parasha, that it says it's aduma tmima, it needs to be perfectly red. And Rashi says, what was the purpose of the Parah Aduma? Meaning, not so to speak, a logical reason. What's the idea of Parah Aduma? Says Rashi, the mitzvah Parah Aduma came to atone for the Egel Hazor, for the golden calf. Rashi gives an analogy. Moshel the Ben Shifcha. He says it's a moshel, an analogy, a parable of a son of a maidservant of the king. Shetinef Paltin Shel Melech, that the young kid made dirty, made a mess in the palace of the king. So the king said, "Tovoy imoy, let the mother come, utakanea chatzoya, and clean up the dirt, clean up the mess. So too, let the parah aduma, let the cow come and atone for what the egel has of the calf. So the calf is the baby, the parah is the mother, let the mother come and clean up the mess." So the Mefarshim asked the question, why isn't it a calf then? Let the child clean up his own mess. I mean, okay, in the parable we could say, look, it's a small child, Shmuel can't do it, so bring the mother. But in terms of the Jewish people, why do we need to bring as a sacrifice the cow to atone for what happened with the calf? let us bring the calf. Let the calf be the sacrifice. In other words, let the parah aduma, instead of being a parah aduma, let it be an egel aduma, a red egel, a red calf. So the Kli Yakar says that generally when you want to clean up something, right, when you want to fix something, this is a general principle. He says you never only fix the symptom, but you need to go to the cause. Don't fix the branches, you've got to fix the tree, he says. Because you have to get to the origin of why this happened. So this is true with everything. In other words, it's true if a person, I don't know, is very angry or a person is very jealous. It's not just enough to clean the symptom, although sometimes we need to control the symptom. But you also have to go to the cause. What's happening within me? What's the cause of what's bringing this out, right? And the same too with everything. When a person transgresses, when a person does something wrong, we can't just fix the symptom and say, I'm not going to do this specific thing wrong. I'm going to have a look at my general connection with Hashem. I have to go to the very root of what's happening. So therefore he says that when a person transgresses, there's the chait, there's the transgression, and then there's the fundamental failing in the connection between us and Hashem. And that's symbolized by the parah, by the cow, as opposed to the calf. And that's why it says that the Torah says that we should atone for the egel hazov. But the Torah is teaching us that when you atone for something, you need to go deeper. So we don't bring the egel, we don't bring the calf, we bring the mother. The mother as a symbol of the source of the child, in other words, right? So therefore we go down to the origin, the source, the very source of what is happening and the cause of what brought about this particular failing. So I saw in a sefer called Oitras HaTorah, and he says, and this is also the reason why the Parah Aduma was red, because part of the failing of the Parah Aduma, part of the failing of the golden calf was an arrogance. And where did the arrogance come from? So we find the Gemara. The Gemara in Brachas says that Moshe Rabbeinu later on in the Chumash, in fact we're coming to it in a few weeks, in Parshas Dvorim, where he reminds the Jewish people of the various things that happened throughout the desert. And he talks about the various places that they camped. And we know, we've done this before, that actually if you have a look at those places, some of them don't exist. And they're just names of imaginary cities which symbolize some of the things that happened to the Jewish people. And one of them is called V'di Zohav, the place of the V'di Zohav, which means like enough gold. But it means it's a reference to the place of the Egel HaZohav, the place where they committed the sin of the golden calf. But Rashi over there, the Gemara over there brings down, actually, it's Moshe Rabbeinu who's talking to Hashem and saying, you know why the Jewish people sinned? Because you gave them too much gold. Because they came up with Mitzrayim with an abundance of gold. In other words, that coming out of Mitzrayim, it was they weren't able to handle the wealth and the resources that they had, and they slipped into being immersed in the gold, and therefore because of that they grew their arrogance and they ended up serving the golden calf. So therefore he says that's why the source of the Kohen God, the source of the Egel Azov, the source of the golden calf was in fact something deeper. It was something that caused it to happen, so you got to go to that cause. Why were they so trapped? Why did they slip into being so obsessed with their wealth that they had? Why did they use it out properly? And that's why the Parah Aduma was red, because red is the color of gold. So the same idea that the mother being the source of the failing, and you have to go deeper to the source, not just to the symptom. So that's just one idea of the Egel Azov. I saw another little interesting thing from the Shaloh HaKadosh, the great commentator and Kabbalist and so on. And he says like this. He says that we just learned before in the Psukim that Hu Yischato Boy, that you have to purify yourself with the egel, with the Parah Aduma, with the red heifer, on the third day and the seventh day. So the Shalosh has an idea which is based on the concept that even the mitzvahs, that we don't have today, even the mitzvahs that we don't have today, meaning even the mitzvah like Parah Aduma, which we're going to read in the Torah this Shabbos, and yet we don't actually have the Parah Aduma, but we can still fulfill the mitzvah. Somehow the mitzvah still applies. In other words, every mitzvah that we are given is eternal. Every mitzvah can be observed and fulfilled. Just sometimes it's in the tangible physical way, sometimes it's in the spiritual way. Incidentally, we don't have a Parah Aduma today, just to digress for a moment, because as the Rambam tells us, so far we had 10 Parah Aduma is to date. We had 9 to date. And the 10th will be made when Mashiach comes. So the Shalosh says the following. He says, the Pasuk says, what is the purpose of the Parah Aduma? The purpose of the Parah Aduma is to bring purity. And the para, it says the para, the paraduma is something you have to get sprinkled upon you the third and the seventh day. So he says, today, what purifies a person? Torah learning, the study of Torah. Today, if a person is impure, meaning we feel disconnected, we feel impure, we feel stained maybe from a disconnection and a failing of in our connection between us and Hashem, we need the para aduma. The para aduma is Torah learning. How is that hinted in the parasha? He says like this. We know that the Torah, the world was created in six days, and the seventh day Hashem rested. Similarly, the Gemara tells us that Shis al vishnin have alma. The world exists for 6,000 years, following which Mashiach will definitely be here before the end of the 6,000 years. And the seventh millennium, it will be an existence of Shabbos. Well, the world will be elevated to a whole nother existence, will be existence of Shabbos. And we know that the 6,000 millennia, the 6,000 years, correspond, each 1,000 years corresponds to a day, and that's based on a pasuk, which tells us that, it's a medrash that tells us that the one day of Hashem is like 1,000 years. Incidentally, it's being said, so now we are Friday afternoon, late afternoon. So we always say that it's a mitzvah to bring in Shabbos early. So Hashem doesn't have to wait till the end of the 6,000th millennia to bring Mashiach. And bring him now, because we need to bring in Shabbos early anyway. Okay, so he says like this. We know the Torah was given in the third millennia, right? The Torah was given in the year 2448, because the Medrash tells us that the first 2,000 years, the world was in a state of chaos. The third set of 1,000 years, like which is the third day, that was the millennia of Torah. That's when Torah was given. The seventh day is the time of Mashiach, the time of Olam Haba, the time of Shabbos, the time of Shabbos existence. Says the Shalah, the Torah is telling us to follow it. That if a person feels disconnected, if a person feels not ready for Mashiach, a person feels not ready to have that revelation that will happen when Mashiach comes. So you have to know this. In fact, let me bring up the pasuk again. So you see it inside. Here we are, this one. Says the pasuk, who yischata b'yem ha'shlish b'yem ha'shvi yitra. The person who gets purified from the paraduma on the third and the seventh day, he'll become pure. Says the shalom, what does this mean? That if a person immerses himself in Torah study, a person wants to get purified, a person wants to be more ready, a person wants to be more pure in front of Hashem. For the seventh day, he needs to know, he first has to purify himself for the third day, meaning he has to immerse himself in Torah that was given on the third day, the third millennia, the third 1,000 years. So if a person purifies himself by Yom HaShlishi, on the third day, by Yom HaShvi, and then he's getting ready for the seventh day, the Tatam Mashiach, Yitar, he'll be pure, he'll be okay. But if you don't do that, if you don't connect a Torah study, that's a problem. So therefore, the Yom HaShlishi, the symbol of the third day and the seventh day, is the key, the secret of fulfilling the mitzvah of Parah Aduma today, which is getting involved in learning of Torah, the purity of Torah. Torah purifies. Torah is like a mikveh, the Gemara says, purify, because the Torah is the Yom HaShlishi, the third day, it's the thing that was given on the third day. And we do that in order to purify ourselves and get ready for the Yishvi, the seventh day, which is the time of Mashiach, Yitar, and then it will be properly pure and all ready for the time of Mashiach. Okay. Now, I said to you before that the Parah Aduma is called a Choik, it's called one of the Chukim, the mitzvahs we don't understand. A very interesting medrash here, which I'm going to learn with you inside. The Medrash at the very beginning of Parashas Chukas seems to expand this concept. What I mean to say, expand this idea that we don't understand the Parah Aduma, expand it beyond just the mitzvah of Parah Aduma, but to the whole concept of purity and impurity. Okay. The remainder of the time today, I'm going to share with you a concept that comes one of the talks of the Lubavitcher Rebbe. It's a deep idea. I hope I'll be able to communicate it properly and clearly. And if people lose me, please let me know, maybe in the chat box or something. But it starts with this medrash. It starts with this idea that normally when we learn the mitzvah and the Torah emphasizes that this mitzvah is a choik, it's one of the mitzvah we don't understand. it normally we think we're referring specifically to the Parah Adumah, which in many Mefarshim it is that way. In other words, we're talking about a specific area of purity and impurity. We're talking about what we call Tumas Meis, when a person comes into contact with a dead body. That's a specific type of impurity. Mikveh is not sufficient for that. You need the Parah Adumah. And the Torah gives us exactly how the Parah Adumah should work. No logical reason. It has a paradox of making someone pure, but making the person involved in it impure, we said before. And that's why it's called the Chukah. But the Medrash seems to expand it beyond just the specific area of Parah Adumah and expands it to the whole concept of Tumah and Tara altogether. Let's see. That's what the Medrash says. It's a nice Medrash. Anyway, it's interesting Medrash. I'm just going to show you parts of it. Says the Medrash, Zois Chukas. Okay. Says the Medrash, Zesh Omar Akosu. That's his acronym over here. Right? Zesh Omar Akosu. This is what the Pasuk says. Mi Yitain Tohoir Mitome. Who could produce, only Hashem, who could produce something pure from something impure? Lo Yechad, no one can do it other than Hashem. For example, the Medrash starts off. For example, Kagon Avraham Miterach. Hashem produced Avram Avinu from a person called Terach. Terach was impure. Terach was a wicked person. Terach served idol worship, Avodah Zarah. And Hashem produced Avraham from Terach. Chizkiah me'achaz. He produced Chizkiah, one of the famous kings of Yehuda, a very big tzaddik, but he came from a Rasha. Chizkiah me'achaz. Yishayahu me'amon. Yishayahu, same thing, came from Amon. Mordechai Mishimi in the story of Purim. Mordechai was a great tzaddik, and the Megillah says that he came from Shimi. Shimi was a wicked person. He cursed David HaMelech. He was punished at the end, as we read in Tanakh. And the Medrash gives a few more examples. Then the Medrash says, Mi Asa Kain, who did this? Mi Tziva Kain, who commanded this? Mi Gozar Kain, who decreed this? Lo Yechidei Shel Olam, it can only be the one creator of the world. Only he could do this. And the Medrash continues, and he says, Tamon Taninon. We learned over there that in the laws of purity and impurity, we have a funny thing. There's contradictions. Baheres kegris, ba'odom tome. This is a reference to the type of impurity of leprosy. So the halacha is, if someone gets a baheres, baheres is a type of leprosy, and he gets a tiny little baheres, kegris, a gris like a small coin, and he gets it on his body, tome, he is completely impure. He gets the impurity of leprosy, which is a very strict impurity. However, parcha bekuloi, we learn this in Parshas Tazria, if the tzaraah spread in the entire body of the person, tohar, the halacha says he's not tome. So amazing thing, he gets the 20-cent piece coin size of tzaraah on his body, he's tome, he needs to be quarantined, he needs to have a whole purification process. But if he gets exactly the same tzaraas on the entire body, which you would think, if he gets a tiny speck, his tummy. How much more so if the whole body is tummy? No, Torah says his Torah. Complete paradox. Says the Medrash. Mi Asa Kain, who did this? Mi Tziva Kain, who commanded this? Mi Gozar Kain, who decreed this? Lo Yechida Shel Olam, only the one creator of the world. Finally, the Medrash says, Tamon Taninon, we learned, with regard to the Parah Adumah. Ha'oiskin bepara mitchila v'atsoif. Someone who is involved in the para, in preparing the red heifer from beginning to end, metamin begodim, he gets pure, he gets impure, he has to go to mikveh, and he's clothed as well. But he gufa metaharis begodim. Yet the para aduma can purify the person and the clothes of the person. Isn't that amazing? Like how could that be? It's a complete paradox. So the same thing says the Medrash. Omar Hakadosh Baruch Hu, the Torah said. Chuka chakakti, this is a law that I've engraved. Gzeira gazarti, it's a decree that I've decreed. Iato rashoi lavla gzerasi, you just have to accept it, do not transgress it, keep the rules, and finished. Right? That's the idea of chukim. What do we see from this medrash? We see from this medrash that this that we learn over here, the concept of chuka, that the Parah Adumah is such a severe chuka, an illogical mitzvah, so to speak, is not just about the Parah Adumah specifically. It is more about the concept of Tumah and Tara, the concept of purity and impurity altogether. So why is that? What does that mean? What is that? What's the concept here? So I want to share with you a very deep idea. One of the famous problems is the Parah Adumah is a choik, as is the rest of purity and impurity. It's a mitzvah for which we don't have a reason. But we know that the Torah says, Zois chukas ha-Torah. When the Torah introduces the Parah Adumah, it doesn't say this is the chayk of the red heifer. It says this is the chayk of the entire Torah. Right? So the Mefarshim will ask the question, it should have said, Zois chukas ha-Parah. This is the chayk of the cow, of this particular mitzvah. No, it doesn't say. It says this is the chayk of the whole Torah. Right? Now, the simple pshat for that is, because this is the classic chayk. In other words, this is the most difficult chayk in the Torah. Right? As I said before, even Shlomo HaMelech, who worked out the rest, couldn't work out Parah Adumah. Okay. But still needs to be understand, what does it mean this is the chayk of the Torah? So the Mefarshim explain. What it means is that the way we fulfill the mitzvah, the laws of Parah Adumah, the laws of the red heifer, symbolizes and gives us direction of how to fulfill the entire Torah. You follow? How to fulfill the entire Torah. That's what we're into. And we have to understand why. What is so special about the Parah Adumah that it gives us a way to understand the entire Torah? How come? Now, let's take that question a step further. Based on what I just said 2 minutes ago, that the Torah is not only referring to Parah Adumah, but the Medrash seems to expand this to all laws of purity and impurity. So what is it about the laws of purity and impurity generally, not just the Parah Adumah? We know that it's a chayk, it's one of the chukim, but what is so special about it, that somehow the way the laws of Tumah and Tahara, the ways of purity and impurity are carried out, somehow, this seems to symbolize the entire Torah and gives us a strategy, an approach, a mindset, an attitude of how to fulfill the entire Torah. Why is that? What does that mean? Okay. I hope the question is clear. Let me take you on a bit of a journey. In a nutshell, what the Torah is saying, but we need to understand what this means. Let me just say the line, then I'll explain to you what it means. What the Torah is really saying is the following. When the Torah says the word Zois Chukas HaTorah, what the Torah is actually saying is that the entire Torah is Chukah. All the 613 mitzvahs are really Chukim. Now, we need to understand obviously what that means. We know that there are three kinds of mitzvahs, which for the purpose of this discussion, we'll just divide into two kinds of mitzvahs. There are mitzvahs that have a reason, the mitzvahs that we don't understand the reason, right? Now, when we talk about mitzvahs that have a reason, they're not just reasons that we made up. We're talking about reasons that are Torah reasons. There are sometimes that the Torah gives explanation for the mitzvahs, which means the Torah is defining those mitzvahs as mishpatim or edus. The Torah is saying these mitzvahs have a reason. So how can we say that the entire Torah is really chukim? No. It seems that part of the Torah are mitzvahs with reason, logical stuff. Part of the Torah is above logic. Number one. Number two, we have to also understand, what does it mean above logic? Does it mean that just we don't understand the reason, but there is a reason out there? Or that there is no reason, and if not, why? Now, what we see from Shlomo HaMelech, it appears that many of the chukim have reasons. Just we not able to figure them out. Shlomo HaMelech could. In other words, they could have reasons which are reasons that God has. God has a reason, right? God has a reason why He gave us certain mitzvahs, but they're divine reasons. They're reasons which are so deep and so hidden and so esoteric that they're beyond the human mind, and therefore we can't understand them. It doesn't mean that there's no reason. But when it comes to Parah Adumah, Shlomo HaMelech said he can't even think of the reason. He can't figure out the reason. Does that mean there still is a reason he just can't figure out, or perhaps there's no reason? And if there's no reason, what does it mean? So, let's understand this by understanding a principle in Kabbalah that works like this. Just like by a person, there are the conscious faculties of the person. For example, there are things that we do which are logical, things which are do which are processed a certain way. For example, let's take Seichel and Midas. So logic lives in the brain. We understand things, we process them, we relate to them. Emotions we feel in the heart. We love things, we hate things. We sometimes we love things because of a reason, whatever the case is. So those are the way the conscious part of the person works. Then there's a deep down underlying principle within the person, which often is what guides a lot of what we consciously operate with, and that's called Rotson. Rotson means the power of will, okay? The power to want something, to really want something. When I really want something, that's a very deep expression of me, okay? I hope you're following me, just stay with me. Rotson, the concept of will, is a very deep expression of me. In other words, in Hasidus and in Kabbalah, it says that Rotson is one of those things that are very deeply rooted in the person. In other words, like this. When I think about something, it's not me, I'm just thinking about something else. When I have a reaction to something, like I'm irritated by something, or I love something, or I hate something, it's me relating to the outside world. Rotson, when I want something deeply, it's an expression of me, I want. It's me. It's what they call in Hasidic terminology, Hatoyas HaNefesh. It's just the way the soul is being expressed. It's what the soul itself really wants. Now, there are two types. This is a difficult part, what I'm going to explain now, so I hope I'm clear. There's two types of rots, and there's two types of wills, two types of desires. There's a logical desire and an illogical desire. What do I mean, illogical desire? So we talk about things that we want because it makes sense. So I want to buy a car. I really want to buy a car. Why? Because my car, let's say, is old and doesn't work anymore. And I need a car to get to work. I need a car to go and buy things, whatever the case is. So I want a car. And then the stronger it gets, I not just want it, I'm desperate for it, and I really want it, and so on and so forth. But it's a desire, it's a will which is connected to a logic. It's a logical will. Then there's a certain concept called an illogical will. Now, why is it illogical? So it can be for two reasons. The real concept of Ratzon, which is very hard to find within a human being, right? But I'll give you an analogy for it a little bit. But there are certain inborn instincts, really, really just things that a human being just instinctively wants. In other words, they are deeper or higher than intellect, right? Now, the only problem with that is it's hard to explain this because with human beings, it's very hard to find that. In other words, most things we want, even though we want very, very deeply, after we want them, they're still explainable, right? You can explain them, there's still logic. So it's hard to find within human beings something that we want which is beyond the seichel, it's beyond logic because it transcends logic, but there's no logical explanation. But what we can find, and I'll give you an analogy. An analogy is with a child, where we find rotzen, where we find a desire that is not what we call lamailam in haseichel, it's not above logic, but it's lower than logic. In other words, it's plain stupid, but it's still a desire which has no reason. So children have this, right? For example, a child will scream to the parents, and I'm sure some of you have had this experience, that they want a toy put in a certain corner of the room, right? I want it put there. So you take it and you put it somewhere else, and the world comes to an end. No, I want it there. Why? There's no why. I want it there, right? So children have that often. I've seen it with my grandchildren. I'm sure it has with my children too. I just don't remember, right? That they want the food put on the plate a certain way. And the parent puts it a bit differently and they throw a tantrum. Why? No, I wanted it this side of the plate, right? Children have that. What is that a dugma? What is that an example of? An example of a rotzen, an example of a will that has no reason whatsoever. There's no logic. It's not that you don't know the logic or they find it hard to explain. There is no logic. It's what we call lamata min haseichel. It's lower than logic. It has no logic. Now, that's an example of something, but you could have also, although it's very difficult to find an example for this within a human being, but you could find a concept where a rotzen is so part of the person that's higher than logic to the point that there's no explanation. A little bit, I found one little example maybe you could say with it is, there are stories of people, for example, that we explain why certain people were drawn to Yiddishkeit. And I'm thinking of a particular story of a girl in China who just needed to become Jewish. Now we know the reason for that is because she has a soul that's hidden and she really wanted to connect to Hashem. And it's something driving her and she can't even explain it herself, right? And then she became completely Jewish. So it's a kind of an example of something that isn't explainable, but it's just so inborn, it's so instinctive, it's so deep. It's like a rotzen, it's a will, without knowing. Okay, but in the human beings, the best example is one that's lower than logic, like by a child. When it comes to Hashem, right? When it comes to Hashem, mitzvahs are called rotzen. It's a very fundamentally important perspective, this. Mitzvahs are called rotzen. In other words, what are mitzvahs? Mitzvahs are Hashem expressing Himself. Just like when you want something deeply, it's what you're expressing yourself. This is me, this is what I want. Hashem is expressing Himself. Mitzvahs reach very deep within Hashem, so to speak. Mitzvahs are not just a response to an existence. Mitzvahs are not a manual to create a functional society. Mitzvahs are not there to create certain spiritual experiences. At their very core, mitzvahs are just the ratzon of Hashem. They are the will of Hashem. And at their very core, and this is a difficult thing to comprehend, but at their very core, mitzvahs, not that we don't know the reason, mitzvahs don't have a reason. Because mitzvahs are ratzon, mitzvahs are the will of Hashem. It's Hashem expressing Himself beyond logic, transcending logic, higher than logic. It's just the pathway to connect to Hashem Himself. It is who Hashem is. That's the mitzvahs. Hashem, so to speak, manifested Himself, he revealed Himself through His ratzon, through His will, and that's who He is. That's it. Now, sometimes there are certain mitzvahs for a very specific purpose that Hashem allowed to, after the fact, evolve into logic. Let me repeat that. But with some mitzvahs, they at their very core, at their very essence, the mitzvah did not come about because of a reason. The mitzvah came about because this is the ratzon of Hashem. It evolves afterwards into the world of reason. And therefore, the mitzvah evolves into a space where it makes sense. And I'll give you an example. And for some people, this might be very strange, but it's a perspective which we need to understand. There's a mitzvah in the Torah, don't steal. Now, that's a very logical mitzvah. It's one of the mishpatim, it's one of the logical mitzvahs. And it almost sounds like a very logical thing to do. Why did Hashem give us a mitzvah not to steal? And therefore, why don't we steal? We don't steal because it's an illogical thing to steal. It's bad for society. If I steal from you, steal, and you steal from me, society will become completely dysfunctional. We will hurt people, we will ruin people, it'll be anarchy, it'll be people will the strongest, this will be survival of the fittest, and society just won't function. So on the surface, most people would say, well, then Hashem gave us a mitzvah not to steal, because it just doesn't make sense to steal. It's logical not to steal, it's a logical thing. Hashem gave us a mitzvah to honor parents, because it's logical that we should throw gratitude, and so on and so forth. But in truth, especially from the perspective of how Kabbalah and Hasidic philosophy explains it, is actually, it's not true. The real reason for not the mitzvah of not to steal is because it's Hashem's ratzon, it's Hashem's will. It is one of those mitzvahs. It hasn't got a reason. It is one of the reasons, it's one of the mitzvahs that evolved afterwards into the world of reason, and therefore at a later stage, or a later evolution of the mitzvah, it actually also makes sense in terms of how society functions. But it's not the cause of the mitzvah, it's not the root of the mitzvah. And in fact, a yid, when we fulfill mitzvahs, is not the reason that we do the mitzvahs. Hope that's clear. When it came to Parah Adumah, according to many Mefarshim, other mitzvahs evolved into reasons. Some evolved into reasons which have human logic. Some involved into reasons which are beyond our logic, but they're logical in Hashem's world. So Hashem's wisdom, so to speak. Shlomo HaMelech was able to reach some of those reasons. We aren't. Therefore, some of the chukim have reasons, but reasons in Hashem's world, not in our world. And therefore, Shlomo HaMelech was able to explore, so to speak, the world of God's wisdom and work them out, but we can't. When it came to Parah Adumah, however, the mitzvah of Parah Adumah is the ultimate chuk. It's the ultimate mitzvah which never descended into the world of any reason. It retained its non-reason revelation. It is Hashem's ratzon. That's all it is. It's Hashem's will. What the Torah is telling us in this week's parasha is Zois Chukas HaTorah. On one level, you need to do all the mitzvahs like that. All the mitzvahs you need to do, even the ones that make sense, you need to do because it's Hashem's ratzon, not because of its reason. You need to do it because why it was given in its core. You need to do it why it was given at its very source, that it's Hashem's manifestation of His will, it's who He is, and therefore it is not about the reason. It's not about the logic. Every mitzvah should be done like that. Every small mitzvah, big mitzvah should be done the same way because Hashem's ratzon. If that's the case, why did Hashem let certain mitzvahs come into logic? Why did He give us a category of mitzvahs which have reason, which have logic? The answer is very simple, but I don't want to go into too much detail now, but very basically, it's because there's an advantage of doing mitzvahs with reason also. Because Hashem wants us to serve Him with our brain. Hashem wants us to understand as much as we can. Hashem wants us to keep every mitzvah like its original form, not because of the reason, but Hashem also wants us to understand it as much as we can so that we're serving Him with every part of who we are, something we've spoken about before. But let's go back to the core of how we do every mitzvah. What does that mean? Well, how does that play out? So let me share with you one final deeper concept when it comes to the concept of rots and the idea of will. If I want something because of a reason, then it's a divisible thing. Or there's differences between one ratzon and another. I'll give you an example. Let's say I want to build a house. And in my mind, I've got a certain desire, how to build a house, what type of furniture I want in the house, what type of kitchen I want in the house, what type of bathroom I want in the house, and so on and so forth. And that's the house that I want. Now, why do I want the house? Many reasons. I want a place to live, but I want it to look nice, and I want it to look a certain way, and I want it to be green, because I like the color green. Whatever the case is, right? So there's many, many parts of this. What happens at the end? What happens at the end if we got 90% of the way? For whatever reason, it wasn't available. The house is there. It's pretty beautiful. There's a couple of rooms that weren't made exactly like I wanted them to be made. Is that like nothing was made, or everything was, or what is it? So we know, no. I didn't get exactly what I wanted, but I'm 90% there, and I'm a normal person that says that's okay. At least most of my criteria were met, right? Or for example, take, let's say, two different wills. If I have a ratzon to have a house, and I have a ratzon to have a car. Now, what's more important? The house, because I need a place to live. The car, I can take public transport. Both of them I want because it's part of functional living. It's logical to want both of things, but because there's a priority. So if the house gets built, but the car doesn't, okay, so my main desire was fulfilled. My other one, not yet. However, let's go back to the example when there's pure will, when there's pure ratzon. Take the child, for example, right? The child says he wants his cucumbers put on the right side of the plate. No logic, no reason. That's what he wants. It's in a different bowl, and he wants it on the right side of the plate. And you put the cucumbers on the left side of the plate. And the kid throws a tantrum. Why? 3/4 of his ratzon was done. The answer is, because ratzon, will, is so the person himself, that it's not divisible. It's what I want. It's either done or it's not done. It's either complete or it's not complete. It either was fulfilled or it wasn't fulfilled. When you take the cucumbers and you put them on the left side of the plate, even though you moved from the other side of the table and it's still accessible to the child, and he really wants, he can still eat it, he just prefers to eat it on the right side of the plate. No. The child will throw a tantrum. Why? Because he wants it on the right side of the plate and his will wasn't done. 3/4 done, 90% done, 99% done, that's not done. Done is when you do what I want. That's ratzon. How does that play into the mitzvahs? So you see like this. We find with mitzvahs an interesting thing. We find on the one hand that there are differences between mitzvahs. Why? Because mitzvahs do descend into the world of logic. So there are differences. There are what we call strict mitzvahs and less strict mitzvahs. There are mitzvahs which have bigger consequences, which have less consequences. There are mitzvahs that are, let's say, not eating chametz on Pesach, or I don't know, or like, I don't know, how we tie shoelaces in Shulchan Aruch, or simple mitzvahs, right? Comes along Chazal and tell us that a person should never say one mitzvah is more important than the other. All mitzvahs are equal. So the question is, no, they're not equal. There are some, for example, there are biblical mitzvahs and rabbinic mitzvahs. Right? There are mitzvahs midoraisa, mitzvahs derabbanan. So what do you mean? And they have different halachas, different laws. So the answer is, because it depends how you do the mitzvah. In other words, yes, there are differences in mitzvahs. And some mitzvahs have stricter halachas and some mitzvahs have less strict halachas. But they're all part of the will of Hashem. If I keep a mitzvah not because of its reason, if I keep a mitzvah because I know that with every mitzvah I'm doing Hashem's will, therefore I'm connecting to Hashem, then although different mitzvahs have different halachas, but there are actually no differences between each mitzvah. A yid must not say, I'm going to treat this mitzvah more seriously than the other. Now, I'm not talking about when someone is on a journey to re-embrace Yiddishkeit and all that. Of course, there's an order and you know, you can't do everything at once. But when a yid is approaching mitzvahs, and a yid is keeping mitzvahs, and he says, you know, this mitzvah, if I don't do it, no. If it's the Ratzon of Hashem, if it's the will of Hashem, it makes absolutely no difference. It's indivisible. It makes absolutely no difference if it's a very, very important mitzvah, which I'm going to do with great, it's blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah, which I'm going to do with tremendous enthusiasm and seriousness and solemnness, or it's a simple washing before bread, before I eat a meal. They're both the Ratzon of Hashem and the Ratzon, you're not mechalek. One Ratzon doesn't have a bigger priority on the other Ratzon. One Ratzon doesn't have, cannot be broken up into pieces. It's you do what Hashem wants or you don't do what Hashem wants. They're all the same. Part of Hashem's Ratzon is that some mitzvahs have different laws than others. Some have stricter laws than others. But they're not in essence stricter. They're not in essence less strict or more strict. They're all the same. Because if I keep all the mitzvahs because Hashem said so, not because of the reason, not because of their logic, or not because of their logical status and the hierarchy of strictness or less strictness of mitzvahs, then my approach to every mitzvah is exactly the same. And that's what the Torah is teaching us. Zois chukas ha-Torah. We need to keep all mitzvahs because they chukim, because they're the Ratzon of Hashem. They all originate like the Parah Adumah did. They all originate like impurity and purity. They all originate without any reason. Now, I see we're running out of time, so I'll just end with this short thing. Why does the Medrash expand it beyond just Parah Adumah? Why has this got to do with the general principle of the concept of purity and impurity? Because in the mitzvahs of purity and impurity, you see this. You see, when you come into contact with impurity, right, there's no levels. So the way it works like this. If something is impure and you come into contact with it and you can't go into the Beis HaMikdash, it doesn't matter how much you come into contact with it. If you touch it, you tame. You know, there's not differences if you touch it or you eat it or you carry it or you wear it. It's all the same. In other words, there's many examples of this. In the area of purity and impurity, even if you touch it with your little pinky finger, the whole body becomes tomei in all biblical cases. In other words, it's that indivisibility where you find that if you come into contact with a little bit, it affects the whole of you. It's the indivisibility of the mitzvah of purity and impurity where you see the concept of the indivisibility of mitzvahs because they're all the will of Hashem. So, I sort of ran out of time for this because this needs a bit more explanation, but that's the specific idea. But I want to just say the other way around. When a person, let's say, is distant from mitzvahs, because there's a very unbelievable positive side to this. When a person is distant from mitzvahs and a person wants to improve, and a person wants to come back to Hashem, now of course it has to go with a certain order. You can't take everything all at the same time. And there's an opportunity for a person to do a mitzvah, for example, right? And a person's, you know, let's say a person has an opportunity, they can, I don't know, put up a mezuzah, or they can say a bracha, right? And the person thinks to themselves, but hold on a second, I'm a hypocrite. How can I do this mitzvah if I haven't yet taken upon myself a very big mitzvah? I don't know. I don't eat kosher or chas shalom, I don't keep Shabbos made, whatever the case is, right? What's the point of doing the small mitzvah if I don't keep the big ones? That would be true if mitzvahs were logical. In other words, what's the point of building me a house when you just build a garage but you didn't build a whole house? It doesn't make any sense because obviously I need the house better, more than I need the garage. But if every mitzvah is the Ratzon of Hashem, so it doesn't make a difference which mitzvah you connect to. This is the This is the other side of it. So in other words, it goes both ways. On the one hand, when I keep mitzvah, I should never belittle a mitzvah because it's less important, because not all mitzvahs are important. Because they're all the ratzon of Hashem, but it works conversely. If I'm now getting involved in mitzvahs, if I'm growing, I should never think to myself, what's the point of growing in a small mitzvah if I haven't grown in a big mitzvah? Because it doesn't matter which mitzvah I grow in, I have to grow, I have to keep growing. And even if I chap a tiny mitzvah, I've still connected to Hashem Himself, because this tiny mitzvah is the ratzon of Hashem, it's the will of Hashem, and therefore it's as important to Hashem as the big mitzvah. There's no difference. Yes, halachically, of course, if a person had a choice, maybe you would make differences, but in terms of approach, in terms of I'm connecting to a small mitzvah, does that mean I'm stupid or I'm hypocritical because I haven't connected to the big mitzvah? No, because every mitzvah I connect to, I'm connecting to Hashem Himself, because they are all, every mitzvah, tiny mitzvah, rabbinic mitzvah, doesn't make a difference which mitzvah it is. They're all expressions of Hashem's ratzon, of the deepest core essence of Hashem. And when you do the mitzvah, you connect to Hashem Himself. And that's the lesson from this week's parasha, Zois Chukas HaTorah, that every mitzvah needs to be kept like Parah Adumah. Every needs to be kept because of its core essence, which is the ratzon of Hashem. And therefore, there's no differences between mitzvahs. I don't weigh up mitzvahs. And even if I have an opportunity to chap a small mitzvah and I haven't yet chapped a big mitzvah, I'm still chapping the ratzon of Hashem and I'm still connecting to Hashem Himself. That's one of the lessons from this parasha. And we've run out of time, so I'm going to stop there. All the best, everyone.
Thanks very much, Rabbi.
You're very welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Rabbi. All the best.
Thank you.
Oh, God. Tuesday, 1st of September, yeah.